It was a golden moment for George M. Cohan that night when he finally stood up to speak to his friends.
This gathering here tonight, it's more of a tribute to the memory of my father than anything else. And, of course, that makes it doubly thrilling to me. I realize that occasion of this time that a man should really have sat down and prepared a substantial speech of some kind. But that, of course, that's asking a great deal of a song and dance man. Especially a song and dance man who tried so hard not to be a song and dance man. And then had to go back being a song and dance man in order to earn a living. About a week ago, the New York Times called me up. And the fellow on the phone asked me if I would send them an advance copy of my speech that I was to deliver at the Catholic Actors Guild dinner. And that kind of made a hit with me. I told him, I said, why? I said, I haven't any speech. At least not yet. Well, he said, you know, the dinner's next Sunday. I says, that's what I'm talking about, yes. And I tried to explain to him that I was the kind of a fella that never even started to write a second act until the first act had been in rehearsal at least a week. He couldn't quite understand that, however. But that's the way it is. I remember very well when I was a playwright in the old days. A fella come up and ask me during the rehearsal of a first act, say, what am I going to wear in the second act? I had a set speech for him. I said, well, I don't know, but if you tell me what you'd like to wear, maybe you can give me an idea for a second act. I always wanted to be able to make a good speech all my life. I've been wanting to make a good speech. And I always wanted to play a good game of pool, too, but I somehow... I never could make the grade either way. I don't know why it was. However, I'm satisfied. It's all right. I'm glad to be working for Sam Harris. It's all right with me. He worked for me for 15 years. He didn't know it at the time, but he's found it out since, I guess. This Harris man, by the way, is a very surprising person. Full of surprises. I know he's handed me many a surprise. I don't mean by that I didn't always know that he was a great showman, great judge of plays and all that sort of thing. But I mean, he's a surprising man. I remember the first time he surprised me. Of course, when Sam and I first went in business together, I naturally thought Sam had a lot of money, you know. We didn't talk about that until we were in the middle of rehearsals of our first show. And when he told me he was broke, that was my first surprise. He seemed to be just as much surprised as I was when I told him I was broke, too. And the members of the company were very much surprised when they found out we were both broke. However, we did all right. We went along for a long time. Eventually, we had a lot of shows, and we got a lot of theaters. And I remember when we started to accumulate our theater interests, I remember I went to my father. I was a little bit worried about coming too involved. I told him what we were doing. I asked him, I said, do you think we ought to hang on to these theaters? And I remember my father's advice. I remembered very well. He said, well, I don't know much about whether or not you ought to hang on to the theaters, but you take my tip, kid, and hang on to your dancing shoes. But to get back to this speech business again, I read in the paper the other day, I was reading Mrs. Roosevelt's column. So you can see that I give the papers an awful reading. I meeting where she told about some fellow that went around, that she'd watched him, I think for 2 or 3 years, he'd been making the same speech no matter where he went. Made the same speech in the same way, same delivery, same inflection, same everything, same gestures, everything he did. She heard it, she said something like a half a dozen or a dozen times. It's always the same speech, and he always got away with it. Well, it's getting very late. And I'm going to tell you that I beat that fella to it. I made the same curtain speech for about 25 years. And I'm going to make that speech now. And I don't think I'm out of order making it. Because spiritually, I really think that my father thanks you. My mother thanks you. My sister thanks you. And as for myself, that goes without saying.
That was a night to remember and be thankful for, because during most of the few years that remained, George M. was ill. Shortly before he died in 1942, he caught one last glimpse of Broadway. He stopped at a theater where they were showing the film based on his life, Yankee Doodle Dandy. He stayed only a few minutes, and then went home to wait for the last curtain call. The curtain call on a life that became a legend.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle do or die. I'll be my nephew of my Uncle Sam. Born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle daughter. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am the Yankee Doodle boy.
He's a Yankee Doodle dandy. A Yankee Doodle do or die. Yankee Doodle.